Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 179 on Motivated Seller Leads from Radio Advertising with Chris Arnold. If you're into real estate investing and building wealth, congratulations, you are in the right place. My role here on the REI Diamond Show is to identify high caliber guests who specialize in building wealth, such as real estate investors and other industry service providers, invite them onto the show, and then draw out the jewels of wisdom, those tactics, mindsets, and methods used to create millions of dollars and more in the business of real estate. So on this episode, Chris and I debate the benefits of negotiating face-to-face versus closing deals over the phone. You know, virtual deals are immensely popular now in 2021. Advertising on the radio for motivated sellers and high-level masterminds. Chris has mastered the art of radio advertising to generate motivated seller leads in Dallas, Texas, and now helps other investors to do the same. Let's jump right in, shall we? All right, cool. Welcome to the REI Diamond Show, Chris. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me on. Glad to come in and add some value today.
For sure. So it's always exciting for me, right? The weather's this obvious topic a lot of times on our show. I don't know if the listeners are sick of it or what, but I know that a lot of my listening audience is in the chilly Chicago, Philadelphia markets, and we're all looking out the window at snowstorms as we speak and canceled flights. And it always brings a different perspective when I ask the guest, like, you know, how's the weather where you're at in the world, Chris?
That's a great setup, man. I love it. Obviously, I'm down in Tulum, Mexico, full time. And that's about, you know, hour and a half south of Cancun on the Caribbean side. And so I've been down here for about 3.5 years, and the weather's great. I have come to realize I do not need seasons. I am literally fine with sunshine every day. And if I want a season and experience that, I'll just travel to a season, but I don't need to live in it, is what I've come to know.
Nice. Where was home, just for perspective, 3.5 years ago prior?
Yeah, I mean, I was in Dallas, Texas, right in the heart of downtown, doing real estate. And again, that's still where we do predominantly most of our real estate, is in Texas.
That's cool. So I'm sure we're going to get into it in just a moment about, you know, how you ended up there and part of how your business got there. It sounds like you're living that dream umbrella drink, sitting on the beach in the Caribbean lifestyle that many real estate investors are sold at the seminars. But like you, and oddly, like yeah, no one else who's ever been on my show has ever done that, Chris. So like, you actually are doing it.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got into real estate, and again, it's the same thing. I think everyone says it. And I think the core value that drives a lot of us as entrepreneurs is freedom. But I think for a lot of people, they get in and they actually end up having less freedom, than when they work to just traditional 9-to-5. And so freedom was a key piece for me. And, I was going to fight, however long it took and however hard to make sure that, you know, I had freedom of time and freedom of location to really create a lifestyle business, because I'm an adventure guy. I'm a guy that gets replenished by being outdoors. I love being around people. And so I am not the guy that's going to wake up and grind it out every day. I just don't believe in that philosophy.
Gotcha. Yeah, I used my freedom of location early on. I read Tim Ferriss's book probably the year it came out, you know, 4-Hour Work Week.
And such a great read.
Yeah, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I could like organize a business. And I kind of did that early on, and I was in Philadelphia, and I was able to get the freedom of location and was able to pick up and then confidently move to Chicago, where I wasn't doing business at the time and I still live, but so I could be near my daughter, who was like, you know, in her teenage years, and it was to be a father, right? It allowed that freedom of location, allowed me to like be a real father in my daughter's life. And now she's getting ready to head off to college, and I'm wondering what the hell I'm doing in this icy cold tundra. But that's a story for another day.
I love you use the word tundra. Such a great descriptive word in cold weather. The tundra.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. So enough of the stage. The stage is set. So you run COSA Investments. That's kind of what I think led in doing some background history there to kind of what your life is today and where you've become an expert, Chris. So do you want to kind of start with the creation story, how you got started in real estate, maybe how it briefly, you know, the brief description of how it developed to what it is today, and then what you've gotten really good at doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started 15 years ago, been in the game for a while. I started immediately once I got out of grad school. For me, I actually have a master's degree in theology. So, you know, everything that I was trained and wanted to focus on was always the impact of people's lives. So social entrepreneurship is what attracted me. And so finishing up my degree, you know, I was looking for a vehicle that would give me the freedoms that we talked about, right? Freedom of time and freedom of money and location. And so what seemed best at that point, being 25 years old, knowing really nothing about business at that juncture, was real estate, you know? And I was like, you know, that seems to be a great vehicle from what I see. So, you know, I'm going to get off the bench. I'm going to get in the game. And so I got licensed as a real estate agent, you know, smiling and dialing, calling expireds and FSBOs. I can remember those early mornings pulling those lists. This was back before technology did that for you automatically. And so I went kind of the brokerage route. I still have an independent brokerage and built that up to a pretty sizable team. And then probably about 8-9 years ago, I started the investment arm to go along with the retail piece. And you know how it is, fix and flip, wholesaling, a little bit of everything above. And so at this point, it's a completely virtual platform. So we have no brick and mortar office, and we do all of our deals out of Texas, but I'd say that about 80% of our staff live in other states around the U.S. So not only do I have that kind of freedom of location, so does the staff as well. And I've got a great COO and a great leadership team that pretty much manage all of the day-to-day. So I have little actual oversight over that business, so I get to focus on some things I'm more passionate about.
Nice, nice. What are those things you're more passionate about?
Yeah, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I launched Multipliers Brotherhood. What the need that I saw and the thing that I wanted to fulfill was the fact that entrepreneurs doing what we do at the stakes in which we have to do them under tend to isolate and really not have one confidant or person in their life that they can open up to when the shit hits the fan. And so because of that, you see a lot of sideways behavior that comes out. You see substance abuse and alcohol abuse and extramarital affairs and so forth. And so what I launched about 5 years ago was a brotherhood for really the top 5% of the real estate investors around the country, creating a safe place where we could come in, grow our businesses, but at the same time become the best fathers, husbands, leaders that we could absolutely be, and knowing that we would not really become those things if we didn't have the right men in our life. So that business is what gets me out of bed every day. I love that organization.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. As the listeners here have probably heard me say before, I struggled with, you know, drugs, alcohol for a long time, and I got clean in 2006, well, 2005, and I stayed clean for a period of time, and I built my business, real estate. I got in 2006, around the same time that you did, Chris. And then, you know, as I do see a lot of real estate people run into those same challenges, it's same freedom and sometimes the checks that come with commas in them. I don't know. It opens up a pathway of choices, and you can make bad choices. And, you know, 2008, 9, 10, I kind of fell back into my old habits. And finally, in 2012, January 21st, I quit drinking, you know, smoking a little marijuana here, like nothing at all since that date. And it's obvious that my life is much better. I mean, I'm here for my daughter and, you know, things are going well. So, but I do see in my own history without having people to kind of lean on and see the example of, and I was kind of that like lone soldier. It's not the way it is for my company now. We have a strong culture of self-improvement and helping each other and picking each other up internally. And it's great to have a group of partners. You know, 20, 25 people or so on the team right now, to lean on and have as example to make sure that we're like kind of looking around, making sure we're all keeping up pace with all the areas of our life. So it's cool that you put that together, for the top 5% of real estate investors around the country. I could see why that is a driving force and excites you to wake up in the morning, Chris.
Without question. And I have the same type of background as you. And that's true, I think, for most entrepreneurs. We tend to be risk takers. We tend to be the kids that got a lot of in trouble in school. I see that storyline again and again. Tend to rebel, to disregard rules. Those things are an important part in the traits of a great entrepreneur, as long as they're put in the right direction. They're put in for good, right? And so, you know, with that, I realized that, you know, as much as these men need it, I needed it myself. And that, you know, for me to think that I was going to get the top of Everest by myself was, I mean, that's a delusion. You know, there's no way that we're going to really become who we need to become as men in our lives without having other great men around us. So as much as I have built this to minister to these guys, you know, equally, if not more, these guys minister to me, being a part of my life as well, and keep me together and continue to help me be the man that I need to become. So absolutely, super passionate about it.
Love it. Love it. Cool. So we got some purpose behind you, Chris. That's definitely a great place for us to start there. So let's go back. I don't know if it was 8, 9 years ago when you put the investment branch of the brokerage together. I don't know if it was before then or if it was after then, but I'm thinking, I'm going out on a limb here, Chris, that somewhere along the line was an inflection point, and you went from, you know, this hard labor of pulling these expired listings. And I don't think that's what led to the success you eventually started to have that maybe opened a door for you to kind of work virtually in 3.5 years and, you know, the latter portion of your career's growth. What would you say was the inflection point, and what would you point to as, hey, this is kind of the thing that really made all the difference?
Yeah, you're talking about where I really started to see growth and change and development. Yeah, I think it was a few things.
Okay.
It was when I really understood the value of coaching and being coached. I think, you know, at this point, like as of today, I have about 5 coaches that I work with in my life. And so if you go back and look at the biggest changes and transitions, that was one. The other was hiring a true integrator and chief operating officer. You know, when you get that, again, rocket fuel, visionary integrator relationship going as well, that created some major change. And then I think thirdly, from a perspective as a leader, to be humbled by the fact that there's somebody out there better at every job in my organization than I am, and stop walking in ego thinking that I can do it better and that it's my baby. And so as soon as I truly embraced delegation, truly embraced having, you know, the right coaches in my life and the right COO, that's when things really started to change. So if I could go back, those are the 3 inflection points.
Nice. Okay, cool. So what about when you started to scale your lead flow, right? You're calling expired still to this day, or you have a better idea?
Yeah, so if we're speaking in terms of just scaling lead flow specifically, it would be about radio. So okay. I'm the type of guy that's gone in and done literally every type of marketing channel that's out there. And I think probably some of the listeners know what that's like, because you're trying to find whatever is the best fit for you. But without question, and I've actually been doing it for 10 years, because I even started on the retail side before I flipped it to the investment side, was radio. And I like to call radio, the best way I describe it, is the marketing channel that everyone knows about but nobody's using. So usually what will cross people's minds when I say this, and all I have to do is connect a couple dots, and it's like, oh, I got it, is number one, people will go, well, radio is old. And I'll go, absolutely, and so is your demographic. Because the problem is people confuse themselves as their avatar. And so you evaluate your behavioral style and say, well, I got a Spotify account or I stream music. But I'm sorry, people over the age of 50 do not do that. And the primary demographic for real estate investors across the country, without question, is over the age of 50. Those are the people that when we're going directly to seller that we're picking up a lot of our deals from. So if you understand that those people by nature still have the habit of listening to radio, they do not stream their music, that gets you literally right in front of the very people that you want to get in front of. And it's been completely overlooked all these years that I've been doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense. You know, people sometimes maybe would turn their nose up to it. I'm curious because I don't do the retail brokerage side, and I do know that there's some other people who advertise on radio in the markets that I am doing business, and they do a lot of retail brokerage. And I'm wondering, like, you know, economically, my radio ads, Chris, they didn't pan out, and I can't keep them going with the exception of, like, you know, one or two small radio stations. I can't keep them going because it really doesn't justify the cost. We're not getting the lead flow in. The cost per lead is too high. The cost per deal is too high. But I don't really have the other tool in the tool belt to, like, give a retail listing, because that's not where we never developed the retail brokerage side. We strictly flip houses and kind of focus on that niche. What am I doing wrong?
I can tell you a few things. Again, most of the people that I work with to set up radio, even like ourselves, don't really do anything on the retail side. We're talking about using radio as 100% marketing channel for de-stress seller leads to, again, do whatever you want, fix and flip, owner finance, et cetera. So a couple things I can tell you that's being done wrong for you or anyone else, and I see this again and again, is most people are going in, and here's their process of buying radio. I see it. What you're going to do is call into your local radio station. You're going to ask to speak to a sales rep, and you're going to ask for a media packet. And they're going to send over a media packet with the pricing of the stations, and then you're going to lean on that sales rep to give you a little bit of guidance, and you are going to pay pretty close to that price and feel good that maybe you got it 5 to 10% under. That would be just like me saying, I don't understand why I can't get investment to work because I go to my local real estate agent and I sit down and I look at the MLS with them and then I go to buy properties, but for some reason I'm not making any money. And of course you're already laughing because you do not go to a retail agent to find investment property, and you do not go to a rep and ask for a media packet to do radio. It is about as 180 backwards as it could be. So here's the process and what we do. We buy radio like we buy our real estate at a deep discounted wholesale price. I'm talking 25 to 50 cents on the dollar. And the way that we do that is we go in and we subscribe and get access to what is called Nielsen. I want you to just think Nielsen is like the MLS for radio. It has all the data and stats and statistics on each radio station. We pull a certain amount of reports, and based on those reports, we call a station and we tell them what they're worth. We tell them what they're worth based on how many people listen to that station, which we refer to as QMs, how many people are over the age of 45, hour by hour reports, et cetera. And I'm telling you, stations are not used to this. They're like, I'm used to people just asking me for a media packet. These people are coming in packing heat on reports and coming in and telling us what they'll pay for it. So what I can tell you is most people are not making money on radio because they're just like someone going and trying to make money on investment property by using a real estate agent. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there one or maybe two other mistakes you would say that people would make most often when trying to run radio advertising?
Yeah, without question. They are choosing the wrong genre of station. They are not understanding that radio is meant for the avatar of people over the age of 50. So they're going to go in and look at a station and they're going to see, you know, certain things like, wow, that station, you know, based on the rep telling me is a super popular station. And you look at the station, it's like, oh, there's Taylor Swift and, you know, whoever else on there, Bruno Mars, and, you know, and the rep's telling you, man, it's a great station. You know, it's super popular, gets a lot. But the problem is you didn't connect the fact that people over the age of 50 don't listen to Taylor Swift. They listen to classical music. They listen to old school rock, old school country. So people are literally going in and just choosing the wrong genre of station. I see this happen all the time. And so you've got, again, this isn't rocket science, but you have to understand that you've got to match the type of music to the type of person that you're going after.
Yeah, and that kind of makes sense. And we did do that, I thought. We had it on the sports talk radio, which was usually, like, who watches
wrong.
Baseball,
wrong.
Right?
Wrong. I'll tell you why that's wrong. So you want to focus on music because when it comes to sports and talk radio, yes, you are getting people that are over the age of 50, but you're dealing with an affluent demographic. People that listen to talk radio primarily do not find themselves in a distressed situation. I'm not saying that talk radio doesn't work, but the people that we are going after that are going to have a circumstance that creates a deal, I'm sorry, do not tune in and listen to whoever, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, or whatever, man. These are people that listen primarily to music. And so that would be another, again, you're asking me what mistakes I think were made. I'm just kind of pointing out some differences here on how we view radio and how we set it up. And you know as well as I do, every marketing channel out there works if you know how to work it. I know people that have built businesses off of text blasting, RVM, bandit signs, you know, pay-per-click campaigns. It all comes down to you got to crack the code on the marketing channel. And so what we're talking about today is that radio is such a substantial marketing channel if you understand how to crack the code on it. And again, I think if anyone's listening today, they're like, okay, I get this. This, I can see how everyone else even thinking about doing this is doing it completely backwards from the way that we're talking about now. Let's speak numbers, right? I help people set this up all over the country. So I'm talking most markets at this point that we've helped people set up statewide. So what I can tell you is for the last 10 years of us doing radio, and I see this also for people that we do this with, is that they get a $3 to $4 return. So again, that's what matters on marketing. Again, cost per lead, cost per acquisition, yeah, those numbers are great to look at, but the number we care about is what comes out the back end, and that is for every dollar we spend, how many dollars are we getting back in return? And so I can tell you, for the last 10 years, we always land consistently between 3 to 4. And that's what I love about it, because when I did like direct mail, we were sending out 100,000 pieces of direct mail a month at one point. The problem I find with these other marketing channels is you get a very roller coaster effect on your dollar per dollar return. It just doesn't create a consistent flow of leads, and there's just things that come in and affect, you know, what type of return we see on a monthly basis. Radio for us has just been tried and true. We always land somewhere between on average $3 to $4, and that's been that way year after year, and that's what I see across the country as well, which is great. If you can triple to quadruple your investment on your marketing channel, that's a good, healthy marketing channel to keep.
Yeah, it has to be around there. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. So we had number one, don't pay retail for the radio spots. Number two, choosing the wrong genre. What else am I missing as far as mistakes go, Chris?
I think that those are probably two of the biggest mistakes. And then the third is going to be probably the ad. You know, what we're doing is, again, I'm going to back that up and say this. What is being missed are the other 20 variables that need to align for you to create the stress seller lead. So we could come on radio and sell different products, right? You could try to, you know, generate the stress sellers. You might try to sell a product. I might be an attorney trying to generate leads. You have to understand that every industry has a certain way in which radio needs to be aligned. So the question you start to ask, let me just start from, do you run a 30-second spot or a 60-second spot to generate motivated sell leads? To get motivated sell leads, is it better to advertise on weekdays or weekends, mornings or evenings? Do you put a phone number or do you put a website address or do you put both on there? Unless you've split tested and begin to figure out that there's a certain way that those variables need to line up, you're going to miss the boat because it differs from whatever it is you're trying to sell on radio. So for instance, when I did retail, and in the beginning, as I mentioned, I got into radio tinkering on the retail side to generate listings. Those ads, in the sense of when they ran, all of the variables I just talked about were entirely different. And that's still underneath real estate. We're just talking about generating a listing lead versus a motivated seller lead that wants to sell cash. And it was that much of a difference. And so what I would tell you is, those variables have to be lined up, and on top of that, you've got to be running the right type of ad as well.
Gotcha. Now, do you find, I mean, you're doing this for some other people with some people, coaching them, et cetera. Do you find that these variables are differing from market to market, Chris?
Nope. It's the same set of variables.
Interesting.
We literally copy and paste the same set of variables.
Interesting.
Yeah. The only thing you might see is you might tweak the language in the ad a little bit, just depending on your area, so forth, in the sense of adding a certain level of, let's say, pizzazz or style based on your culture of your company, or, you know, the way that you understand maybe demographically how people in your area communicate. Again, people in the Midwest are a little bit different than people in New York, et cetera. But other than that, we're copying and pasting the same formula.
That kind of makes sense. What this sounds like it's not a strategy for someone who's just starting out or flips a couple houses per year. You kind of have to be running the advertising.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I will tell you that 80% of the people that we've helped set this up have been in the business less than 2 years. Here's why. Most people think that in order to get on radio, I'm going to have to start with a budget of 10 grand. Most everyone, and including myself, when I started on my first station, to get on a radio station and advertise, we do the exact same formula. We advertise 100 times per month on a radio station. We start at 100, we end at 100, and then we just go buy another radio station and do another 100 ads. That makes sense? So most people are like, man, I'm probably spending $10,000 a month on, you know, each station. Nope. We spend around $1,000 to $2,000, which means we're buying ads at $10 to $20 for a 60-second spot, which means that the student that is newer to the game, who, you know, spending a couple grand on direct mail, probably more, $3,000-$4,000 a month on direct mail, can actually get on radio a lot less expensively. And then here's the real kicker of what I've seen. If I'm new and I'm working a 9-to-5, or I'm new to the game, I am really stressing with how to balance my time. And I go launch direct mail, which is what I call a high maintenance program. I got to get the, you know, direct mail card right. I got to, you know, beat everybody out on building the best, you know, list possible and list stacking. Then I'm dealing with the mail company. And then let's not even talk about the headache of all of the calls that come in. And half of those calls are hate calls. And I'm new to the game. I'm like, man, that's a big waste of my time. I can't even hire someone to come in here and filter it because I can't afford it. If you look at radio, it's set it and forget it. You literally just pay your monthly bill and answer the phone when it rings. And the call volume's a lot lower than something like direct mail. And the quality of lead is way higher because people don't call in off a radio ad and tell you to stop playing your ad like they do on direct mail. So what I have found is people that are new to real estate love it because it's low maintenance for them. It's creating an immediate call volume for them. And it's creating a good quality lead for them to be able to convert. And so I found not only is it great to scale, but man, students that are newer are like, man, this is a great channel to start with. So I've had students that literally like, this is the first thing they launch before cold calling, before ringless voicemail, before text boxing. It's crazy.
Nice. Nice. How many leads do you expect for $1,000 a month? I mean, you're talking like 2-3 leads a month, 10 leads?
Depends on, you know, there's a lot of variables there, but let's just
100
say
leads.
An average station of $1,000 to $2,000 a month, you'd be generating, let's say, anywhere from, you know, 10 leads to, you know, maybe 30 leads a month, something like that. Super reasonable.
Nice. Is this better in, you know, in big cities with big radio stations, or is this better in secondary areas where not huge population?
And they, if you lined up people that are in all of those markets, they'll tell you why they think it's better. So if I'm in a small market, I'll argue that the small, it's true. If I'm in a small market, they're going to argue that my campaign is literally, you know, sometimes it's 10% to 20% of somebody like me in Dallas. So they're going to look at my budget and look at theirs and go, dude, you are paying way more than I am because I'm in a small market. I like the fact that my budget will never be as expensive as yours to scale, right? So, You know, people in large markets will say, well, it's more expensive, but I love the fact that I have so many more stations to choose from. and I'm not going to hit a ceiling before you do, because I could spend and get on literally, you know, 20 stations in somewhere like Dallas, Fort Worth, that has so many stations. And so I see the other side. So to be honest with you, like, to answer you straightforward, it's a pros and cons. You know, do you want more supply and the ability to scale really high, you know, being a large market? If you want super inexpensive, then go and advertise radio in a small market.
Makes sense. Do you still run?
Yeah.
You still run real estate companies from the Caribbean completely virtual? You guys are still doing deals with these, right? You didn't just shut everything down and do the mastermind.
No, we're doing deals 100% all day long.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. As I mentioned it, my team runs the show, and they handle all the day-to-day operations.
So do you guys actually do the living room, some boots on the ground where you're doing business and located in specific marketplaces, or do you do everything over the phone and like on a FaceTime call now at this point?
The main thing we have is boots on the ground is we have an in-house runner and inspector. So the way our process works is, you know, lead will come in. The acquisition, we have a calling assistant that will screen the call, because we don't send anything to our acquisition managers that's not warm or hot. When the acquisition manager gets on that call, if that looks like a viable deal, what they do is they actually send out our inspector. So they're setting an appointment for the inspector, not themselves. And the inspector goes out, does a report, does all those type of things, brings that info back, and then we negotiate. And the reason we do that is we negotiate once and we get it right. So again, the other model is just tie it up and then get into doing price reductions. What we prefer to do is actually get it right the first time. But because we have that, you know, I have acquisition managers that are not in Texas. And so they can contract over the phone, because we have an inspector that can go out and see the property and send them back reports and pictures for them to do their evaluation.
So the ACT manager doesn't necessarily need to be in town there. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around it. It's a big topic on my mind too, Chris, because like here we are in the second surge of COVID right now as we record this. Hopefully it dies down a bit by the time this episode goes live. But we, like many real estate investors throughout the country, we tried to make this like quick and immediate shift to doing everything like nearly virtual. And we did a handful of deals, but it was like nowhere near effective as us showing up and doing business face to face. Have you attempted any of that completely virtual experiment? And if so, you know, have some results to share?
Yeah, I mean, we do most of our stuff virtual. We did that pre-COVID. Again, there's two models. I will not argue that you will have a higher conversion ratio if you go belly to belly, you know, eye to eye with someone. There's no question about that. But the other thing that you have to look at is the scalability of, you know, your company's ability to close over the phone. So what I would argue, and this is what we find, like, you know, when we're doing deals in Dallas, Fort Worth, and again, I let my acquisition managers choose. I do have, one that's in Dallas. He's a little bit older school, and so he prefers to go out on the appointment. So that's fine. If he wants to do that, great. But the other ones that aren't even located in Dallas, they don't even have that option. And so what I found, though, is some of my top producing acquisition managers will tell you, you're not going to put me in a car and sit through traffic and know that at max I can go out and pitch, you know, 2-3 appointments in a day because of drive time, particularly in a Metroplex where, you know, one's 45 minutes this way and 30 and so forth. And you get worn out when they could literally sit on the phone and tie up contracts over the phone. So what I'm telling you is it becomes a debate of, yeah, one creates a higher conversion, but the other one is more scalable. And so that's where the debate comes in on, do you want something you want to scale, or do you want to stay nimble and small and get everything you can out of everything you got and go face to face? So I don't think it's right or wrong. I think it comes down to preference on how you want to run your company and your systems. And where we've landed is we've just given our acquisition managers a choice. If you prefer to lock it up over the phone and that's your game and that's how you're going to do it best, then do it. If you feel like you need to get out there and get belly to belly, you can go do that. And so that's where we've landed by allowing them to choose.
Gotcha. And you guys are in one market, or have you started kind of scaling out using that model beyond forgive me. I think you said you were in the Dallas, Texas market. Yeah. I don't remember if there were. Okay. Are
yeah,
there any
we,
other
rather than going to, yeah, rather than going to other markets, meaning like in another state, we just continue to expand our radius. So again, virtual wholesaling is great. I've got buddies that are in numerous markets. My overall philosophy, and again, it's just preference. It's not right or wrong. Is, you know, first we could go an hour outside of Dallas and service that with our buyers list, right? Then we could go 2 hours, and now I think we're probably up to like a 3-hour radius of Dallas. And again, that's a lot of homes, man. You're talking about millions and millions of homes in the 3-hour radius of Dallas-Fort Worth. So when you say we go into other markets, yeah, technically we're in other markets, but we're just doing it by expanding our radius rather than jumping to, you know, hey, I'm going to go now do deals in, you know, San Diego, California.
Yeah, I find myself with the same radius expansion kind of a thing. Me, my team, even ACT managers are like a little more willing to drive an hour and a half, 2 hours now than they were 18 months ago. I mean, you close a healthy deal an hour and a half away that you kind of sized up on the phone, they are going to go out there. I give them kind of the option too in those scenarios. They'll go out there, right? And I think for me, and maybe for you to your degree, Chris, but like I think that, you know, there's a certain coming to terms with the wider radius and the longer drive times for the sake of having deal flow and deal volume. Now, when I'm fixing and flipping houses, doing it the whole start to finish versus a transactional kind of wholesaling a deal that's 2 hours away or selling it as is, buy it, clean it out, maybe paint it with a local person and then sell it, you know, without a tremendous rehab 2 hours away, that's fine. But if it's going to be something I'm changing kitchens, bathrooms, you know, renovating top to bottom, that's got to be inside a smaller radius. But when I first got in the business in 2006, 2007, I had one county, Chris. I was doing business in Delaware County, and that was it. And I had giant county of Philadelphia, probably three times the size, like, you know, 20 minutes away. And I didn't realize I was going to have to get comfortable with that new, larger market if I wanted to sustain any kind of deal volume. And I've seen other investors go through that same kind of thing where the willingness to drive a little further to find the next deal is just part of the, you know, long-term growth strategy or evolution of an investor.
Yeah, and there's less competition out there, to be honest with you. If you can build a buyer's list to serve those smaller rural towns, again, enough people's complaints, well, I can pick a deal up there, but I can't move it. And I always argue back, so build a better buyer's list and marketing strategies on how to move those houses. Because good discounted properties will sell in every town. You just got to figure out who in that town that lives there that wants those deals.
Yeah, that's true. I have run into quite a few worthless deals where the neighborhoods are just so low cost and the properties are in need of too much repair where the numbers don't really justify anyone buying them. You know, some like far cities, southern Illinois and some upstate Pennsylvania areas, upstate Georgia ones we've run into. But on the flip side of that same experience, Chris, are, you know, this very sparsely populated 2.5 hours outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm expecting the, oh, this is going to be a hard-to-move deal. And the thing flies off the shelf. It's the hottest deal. There's a bidding war. I'm like, wow, I can't believe how vibrant
that market
was.
And that's the other thing. You just never know. You just never. And that's the thing about doing deals. I mean, I do think that's a little part of that old strategy of sometimes just wrapping it up. Because we can, as much as we think we can predict, we're always sometimes surprised on deals we thought were a slam dunk that aren't. And deals were like, nobody's going to want this. And it's like, oh my gosh, how do people go crazy over that deal? It's funny.
Exactly. Exactly. So I have a couple wrap-up questions here, Chris, with an eye on the clock here. I do want to ask you these few. The first is, what two books would you recommend most often? Maybe like kind of the newer, just in real estate a year or two. And then maybe like an experienced real estate investor recommendation.
Yeah. You know, for new again, I don't, and there's not, honestly, to tell you the truth, there's not a lot of great, you know, straight real estate books out there. I get this question on podcasts, but I'll give you what I would consider foundational, you know, business reads and so forth. For someone that's a little bit more advanced, a book that really changed my understanding of business is called Organizational Physics. And it helped me really understand the growth cycles of business. It kind of did, for my understanding of business, what traction and scaling up did for my understanding of systems and processes. It was just a game changer. It changed my entire thinking. And for people that are newer, and I always recommend The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. I think that's such a foundational read for people to understand that they've got to learn to transition from being in the business to working on the business. Because I see people get so stuck in the business and never really, you know, take themselves from being a real estate entrepreneur to an actual business owner.
Perfect. I am going to get organizational physics, and I've read E-Myth, but I'm looking forward to checking the other recommendation out. So, Chris, this is the REI Diamond Show. It's all about the jewels of wisdom, hence the diamonds. That said, let's talk about the crown jewel of wisdom. Is there one thing you'd share with your younger self, maybe one thing you wish you knew then that you know now?
That's a great question. If I could go back and talk to that guy. You know, I got to be honest, and I mentioned it a little bit at the top of the show because it's been such a life-changing understanding for me. I just don't think that people understand the importance of, I don't care what you want to call it, mentorship, coaching, whatever you name. I don't really go to accomplish anything in my life anymore without first asking the question, who? Who's going to get me here? So, you know, when I need to better my marriage, I don't get in and go, well, what do I need to do? I ask the question, who do I need to bring into this marriage that's going to help us and give us the wisdom and guidance when we need? You know, when I need to take my fitness to the next level, I don't ask the what question, I ask who. You know, who's the right trainer that's going to get in here and help me meet my goals? And so I wasted too much time in the beginning trying to figure stuff out myself and trial and error in it, rather than just taking the time to always get in and understand that whatever I want to achieve, I'm always going to go find the very best person that's going to help me figure it out the fastest and most effective. And again, people just continue to miss this point, I feel like, again and again. They waste too much time without going to the experts.
Smart. How can listeners get some more information about you, REI Radio, or maybe even Cosa Investments?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the REI Radio, someone's listening going, man, this makes a lot of sense. These are the people I hear like, man, wow, I'm tired of competing with everybody else on direct mail and everything else. It just seems to be so oversaturated right now, and you are looking for a blue ocean. You can go to wholesalinginc.com/REI radio. Again, wholesalinginc.com/REI radio. If the whole multipliers piece was something that you go, man, I never really experienced brotherhood, I would love to have those type of men in my life. You know, if you're doing a minimum of $1 million in revenue per year, you can definitely check us out at multipliersbrotherhood.com. And of course, you know, for always just free kind of content and want to snoop around a little bit, you can go over to my YouTube channel and subscribe at Chris Arnold Real Estate.
All right, cool. I got pages of notes here. Chris, I had a blast and really appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. Good to come on. Had some good conversations today. I like it. And it was great to come in and add some value, man. So thank you.
So are you interested in doing deals with no money down? You know, creative financing? Sounds like a good idea, right? Then you might consider diving deeper into the mortgage note business. The mortgage note business is the creative financing strategy in real estate. First, negotiate no money down deals with sellers. Then find a buyer willing and able to put some money down and continue making payments until the deal is paid off, with a profit for you in between. And one of the things with creative financing is that you can sell properties for much higher prices using creative financing. So here's an example. I bought a package deal a few years ago. And as part of the package, I think there were 5 houses that I really wanted because they were in the right area. And there was a 6th house for $20,000, not in the right area. That house that I had to buy for $20,000 as part of the package, it was worth about $20,000. And I tried selling the house on the market for $20,000, you know, plus or minus, leaving the room for the commission. But to no avail, the house did not sell. So I removed the listing and I wrote a Craigslist ad offering that same house for $45,000. And this time I added creative financing. So the deal sold for a price of $45,000 with $8,500 down
and $443 per month for 10 years. So the deal was off my plate collecting payments. Now, if the deal runs all the way through the 10 years, I'll end up with a total of $61,660 on a deal I couldn't sell that I had to buy for $20,000, which amounts to a profit of $41,660. Not a bad deal on a deal that I couldn't even sell to break even, right? So what's the best way to learn about creative financing, no money down deals, and the mortgage note business? Well, you're in luck. My friend Brian Lochner is hosting a full day virtual workshop in a few weeks on exactly that topic. And normally this costs $97 to attend, but as an REI Diamond Show listener, you can attend free when you register at reinoteschool.com. This class is a full day of content, tons of examples of real deals, and of course many of these deals are the crowd favorites. No money down and extracting a nice chunk of cash up front, followed by years of additional payments. So go check the schedule and sign up at reinoteschool.com. Thank you for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Remember to review and subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. Just search REI Diamonds and click subscribe. I read and I appreciate every review, so thank you in advance for taking the time to write one. Would you like to get my weekly Big Idea email? In that email, I provide the most valuable jewel of wisdom that I discovered during the recording of the most recent episode. Sign up at reidiamonds.com. At that site, you can also access the 182-episode archive organized by category. The long-form gold category is a particular favorite of mine, featuring long-play episodes not limited by time, which take an even deeper dive into the topic and the guest's wisdom. Again, that website is reidiamonds.com. In 2020, my house flipping business, Diamond Equity Investments, bought and sold 283 houses. So far this year, we've closed out 27, and we have 116 more in our inventory, either under construction or under contract and waiting to close. That said, here's how you and I can do business. Number one, if you're interested in having access to real estate deals that you can buy, fix, and flip in your desired market, go to www.accessrealestatedeals.com. Number two, if you're an accredited investor interested in passively investing in my private mortgage investment opportunities, go to www.fundrehabdeals.com. The average deal pays 2 points and 10% interest. And number three, last but not least, I am always buying houses that I can fix and flip, as well as occupied apartment buildings with below market rents. If you have a deal that fits that description in either Atlanta, Chicago, or the Philadelphia region, please send me an email with the details. We are at the conclusion. Next up, we have High Volume Atlanta virtual wholesaler Brandon Barnes joining us to discuss his strategy of making offers over making appointments. Until then, my friend.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.